From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Lata Shri. Dr. Lata is a medical doctor by profession who came to Bhagwan's fold in 2003. She served as a Balvikas guru and a spiritual coordinator in the Satya Sai International Organization, Sultanate of Oman. Since 2012, she is serving at the Sri Satya Sai General Hospital. She has also participated in the Children's Hour program in Radio Sai and gives regular talks in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanti Nilayam. This talk was delivered on the 1st of April 2018 in the Satsang Hall, and the topic for the talk is the quest for happiness. Stay tuned, dear listeners. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some soulful songs by overseas devotees, and at 3:30 p.m. we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Chari. With that, over to Dr. Lata Shri.
Om Shri Sai Ram, offering most humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of our ever-present Lord. Invoking Bhagwan's presence and benediction in this holy satsang, elders and my dear sisters and brothers, a very loving Sai Ram to all of you. Firstly, I offer this talk on the topic, The Quest for Happiness at the Divine Lotus Feet. Speaking to a group of students, Swami said once, "Dear boys, if a Mercedes-Benz car, an expensive glittery car, is parked in your portico, how do you feel? You feel happy, isn't it?" And everybody said, "Yes, Swami, no doubt." Then Swami said, "If the same car is parked in your neighbor's portico, how do you feel?" And there was no answer forthcoming naturally. Then Swami said, "Let alone feeling happy, you may even go green with envy. So what does it show? If happiness were to lie in that expensive car, no matter wherever it is parked, be it your compound or your neighbor's porch, or for that matter even in the showroom, the car should give you happiness. So where does happiness lie? Where does happiness lie? This exactly is what today's topic is. It is a very well-known fact, and if I say all of you will agree with me, that all of us, with probably no exception, in and through all our activities, be it a child which wants to play with toys or which wants to cling on to his or her mother's pallu or dupatta all the time, or even a young boy who wants to spend time with his friends hanging out in a restaurant or a movie theater, or an adult who is busy making his business or career, or even a sadhaka who is involved in seva and sadhana. We are doing all these things only for the sake of happiness. A continuous, perpetual happiness and also highest happiness. Professor Martin Seligman, a professor of positive psychology, he says, man commonly seeks happiness through three means. The first one, he says, is pleasure. A pleasure activity is one which involves the sense objects, like something good to see, hear, taste, eat, or even feel. So activities like the social network sites, endless hours of chatting on WhatsApp, or even TV viewing, computer gaming, and even going out for movies or going out to eat, and even substance use like smoking, alcohol, drugs. All these come under pleasure. Pleasure means to seek happiness. And we all know very well that the happiness we get from pleasure is always momentary and fleeting. It is not long lasting. And one more problem with pleasure is, over a period of time, we need more and more of it to produce the same happiness which we got initially, and also we need varieties of it. That is why it is a habit-forming way of getting happiness. That's why people get easily addicted to smoking, drinking, and also drugs, and even the social network sites, the digital media, and so on. That is why Somerset Maugham once said, if you single-mindedly chase pleasure, soon you will find nothing pleases you any more. And also there is, in economics we have seen, there is this law of diminishing marginal utility. As the thing goes up, the happiness should go up, but it doesn't work that way. Why? See, somebody gives me a glass of payasam, I have it, it is my favorite payasam, I feel happy for some time. And they offer me a second glass, oh, it is welcome because it increases my happiness. A third glass, okay, but happiness goes up or not, I'm not sure. A fourth glass, definitely no, please, I don't want. I may even feel like throwing it up. So, something which gave me happiness just a few moments before, it has become a matter of unhappiness or misery for me. This is the problem with pleasure. But 99% of the world, despite knowing this fact, is mad after pleasure for happiness. Why? The human psychology is that even the expectation of such an activity gives us pleasure. Tonight I am going out with my friends for a movie. Afternoon itself, the happiness starts building up in me. That is why we become a prey to pleasure, though we know it gives us only inferior kind of happiness and also very fleeting happiness, and it can also give us misery. Professor Seligman says the next means is, he calls it engagement. Engagement is, see, when we are involved in doing something which we like our own profession, our own career, for that matter, even our own hobbies like cooking or gardening and playing an instrument, singing and going out and playing a game or sport. All this, though they may be tough and challenging at times, we enjoy it. We derive some happiness from it. This he calls as engagement. Then he says, this probably gives a superior kind of happiness compared to pleasure and longer lasting also. Then the third one he says, he calls it meaning. When we do something, a meaningful activity to make others happy, that gives us more happiness and also a superior, longer lasting happiness. To show this to his own students, he devised a method. He said one afternoon, we are not going to have classes today, we'll go out for a movie. So they all go out for a movie. The students naturally feel happy, no class and movie. And after they come back, he says, come on, rate your happiness on a scale of 1 to 5. And everyone gives some grades. A week later, he says, today we are not going to have any class. We will go to an orphanage, a nearby orphanage, bring some goodies and whatever you can give away, you bring all those things. We will spend some time with orphan children there. And they go and come back. And again he says, come on, rate your happiness on the scale of 1 to 5. And they give some grades. 6 months later, Professor Seligman asks them, see, remember 6 months ago we went for a movie and you felt happy, you even rated your happiness. If the happiness is still there now, can you rate it now? And most of them said, what movie? We don't even remember the name of it. We don't know the contents. What happiness? It's gone. That time we had some happiness and we don't have it now. Then he said, a week later we went to an orphanage and you made others happy, those children happy, and you yourselves felt happy. Can you rate that happiness now? And invariably, everyone gave good grade for this happiness even 6 months later. So Professor Seligman said, when you do something selflessly to make someone else happy, you add meaning to your life. If you don't have a selfish pursuit, then the happiness you get is much more than what you get through pleasure and engagement. But this is nothing new to us, isn't it? Being in Swami's fold, where Swami has laid so much emphasis on selfless seva. As Swami says, what seva does to us is more important than what we do as seva. We ourselves are the greatest beneficiaries, even in terms of happiness. We all know this very well. So this is about the means of happiness as per positive psychology. A very well-known monk of a leading order in our own country, he says, see, Seligman has told pleasure, engagement and meaning are the three means, and look at our own structure of the four goals of human life, so-called the Purusharthas in our Sanatana Dharma. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. And this monk says, Kama Purushartha can be roughly compared to pleasure. Because the nature of desire itself is, you satisfy one desire, two desires spring up. You fulfill them, 4, 8, 16. When it goes on, it keeps multiplying. And also, the very nature of desire is that it is happiness postponed. Why? Unless and until I am going to get this object, I acquire it, I am not going to be happy. I am striving for it and I am in a state of constant stress and tension. Only when it is fulfilled, I get happiness. Therefore, when we go behind desire, we are keeping on postponing our happiness. And one of the equations for happiness is number of desires fulfilled divided by number of desires entertained. So, unless we decrease the denominator, how can the happiness quotient go up? That is why Swami would often say, place a ceiling on desires. Discriminate between needs and wants. While needs can be easily met, there is no end to wants. You can never fulfill them. So, the result is, you can never be happy when you chase the Kama Purushartha for the sake of happiness. Then this monk says, the Artha Purushartha is somewhat like engagement. Because Artha is not only wealth, it is also prosperity, name, fame, power, position, and all those even the money can buy. And what is the problem with Artha Purushartha? See, when we get all these Artha Purusharthas, what happens is, some amount of Abhimana comes to our lives. We feel proud when we achieve something, we feel doership and ego. And all these titles that we have and all the degrees against our names, all are known as Upadhis in Sanskrit. As the Upadhis go up, our pride also goes up. And the moment any of these Upadhis is lost, we are bound to be unhappy. Even the insecure feeling and the fear of losing all these titles or all these Upadhis itself can make us unhappy. So through Artha Purushartha, we can never hope to be happy all the time. This is the problem with Artha Purushartha. And also I would say, the paradox of modern life, we can say even the tragedy of modern life is that, see, compared to ancient times, our ancestors, thanks to science and technology, we are so much better off. We have so many amenities, facilities, all that the money can buy, and the gadgets. The life is so effort-free and also hassle-free. We have all these facilities, support systems for us. But In spite of all this, whatever the money can buy or whatever artha purusharatha can give us, can we say boldly that we are happy because we are having all these things? Then why is the restlessness to change jobs, to change places, you know, vacation destinations, and even we want to change people in our lives, even the relationships in our lives? So can we say that this artha purusharatha can give us happiness? Definitely not. This is the problem with artha purusharatha, when we chase happiness through engagement. At the most, we can say we are comfortably unhappy. That's all. We cannot say we are unhappy. See, most of the time, we are losing our health to make wealth, and the same wealth we need to gain back the health, or even the mental health, not necessarily physical health also. So much for engagement or artha. And this monk says, meaning can be dharma purushartha. Because when we do a meaningful activity, it is a dharmic activity all the time. As Professor Gokak would say, what is dharma? It is the good of the good of the weak, and the good of the most. So a meaningful activity can be roughly compared to dharma purushartha. But even here, there is a problem. See, there is the problem of pride, ego, doership is there, even in our path of seva and sadhana. The moment we do some amount of seva or sadhana, or we learn something from the scripture, memorize a few verses from the Gita and we can parrot it, we feel so proud of our achievement, isn't it? This is called the spiritual ego. And this itself can be a stumbling block for getting perpetual happiness. That is why we have to be very, very humble. This humility is the most important factor for a sadhaka. Not to feel proud and egoistic in the spiritual path. Once we fall here, it is very difficult for us to get up from such a fall. See, after the Lanka battle was over and Rama is coronated in Ayodhya, in the open court, Lord Rama is praising Hanuman to the skies. Yesterday was Hanuman Jayanti, so I thought I would share this particular episode from Ramayana. And Rama is listing the achievements of Hanuman one after the other. It's only because of Hanuman we could locate Sita and we could cross over to Lanka and wage the war. And Lakshmana's life was saved by Hanuman. He's going on praising Hanuman. See, Hanuman, the greatest soul that he is, the dasanudasa that he is a role model for all of us. He is inside in his heart, clutching on to the lotus feet of Rama, and he is constantly praying to Rama, "Oh Lord, save me, oh Lord, save me, oh Lord, save me," as Rama is praising him, because he knows, he can sense his ego, the doership, coming up slowly inside him, raising his ugly head, and he is praying to Rama to save him from this ego and doership. So even on dharma purushartha, there are so many problems for us for getting continuous happiness. What does our scripture say? What does Vedanta say? Where does happiness lie? Vedanta outrightly rejects the concept of kama, artha, even dharma purushartha for the sake of happiness. It says, if you want to chase happiness through these three means, or even Saligman's pleasure, engagement and meaning, you are sadly, thoroughly mistaken. Today is April 1st, Fool's Day, and this Vedanta says, if you chase these three purusharthas for happiness, every day in your life becomes April 1st, a fool's day. You will be constantly fooled in your life, every moment in your life. So where does happiness lie, as Swami asked in the anecdote I narrated in the beginning? So here Vedanta brings in a story. There is a dog which has got its cherished small piece of dry bone. And now and then it takes out this piece of bone and it starts chewing on the bone. This dry bone cuts its own lips and blood oozes out. The blood is very tasty. The dog is tasting its own blood and it is feeling happy. It is on top of the world. But the dog is foolishly thinking that this happiness is coming from this piece of dry bone, least realizing it is tasting its own blood, which is giving it the happiness. So our scriptures say, similarly, you are foolishly thinking all the time that happiness is coming from something outside of you, an external object or relationships in the world. But all this happiness, whatever the happiness we experience, starting from the joy of eating a Kesidas Rasgulla, to the ecstasy we experience when we are seated in Prashanti Mandir and listening to bhajans, say Ravi Kumar sir or Ashwath or Anirudh singing bhajans, up to that happiness, all that happiness is nothing but a reflection of your own self in your own mind. I'll repeat it again. All that happiness is a reflection of your own self in your own mind. All that happiness is coming from the self, the Atman, which itself is of Ananda Swarupa, Sat Chit Ananda. So we may ask, if happiness is inside us, why don't we feel it all the time? Why are we unhappy? But Vedanta says, to reflect that Atman, you need a calm state of mind, a sattvic state of mind. When the mind is pure, calm, steady, still, when the waves on the surface of the mind have settled, the Atman, the self, can be reflected very well in the mind, and you get a taste of that happiness of the self, but you foolishly mistake it to come from the external object. See, there is a mirror and our face is there. When is our face reflected the best in the mirror? When the mirror is clean. So the mind has to be clean. The mind has to be pure and steady and in sattvic state. But how is our mind? Our minds are always in a state of agitation and tension. That is why we are not able to be happy all the time, despite having this happiness inside us only, inside our self. That is why Swami would often address us as Ananda Swarupulara, isn't it? See, it is like the pressure and release phenomenon. A desire builds up in my mind, probably to get the iPhone which is released in the market recently, and all my frantic efforts to get it, the mind is agitated, so I can't feel the happiness. The moment I get it, momentarily the mind settles down and I feel happy, and I foolishly think this iPhone is giving me happiness. And how long it will last? Till such time the iPhone 6 comes along or another desire builds up in my mind. This is what is happening to us all the time. Therefore, happiness is not a commodity or an object which can be bought or sought. It is not even a thought to be entertained in our mind. It is not even an ideology that we can live up to. And certainly not a postmortem project. In this life, in my Janma, I will do a lot of punya, merits. So after I die, I go to heaven and I get to enjoy there. No. Happiness is our own innate nature. It is our birthright. But we may say, agreed, we know self is giving us the happiness. But I don't realize it right now. I can't feel the self. I can't realize the self. All that I feel is this body and mind. So I still need this movie or my favorite actor or my favorite book or this glass of wine to give me happiness. I still need an external object till I am realized myself. This is the argument we can put forth. So the gurus of every tradition, every religion, they say, okay, you can go ahead and do it. Go ahead, try to acquire the things in the world in order to get happiness. But one day when you have exhausted of all these means, you will come to me. You will come to the lotus feet of the master. You will surrender. You will say, I am helpless. Please teach me how I can be happy. And the scriptures even say, take your own time, no, doesn't matter at all. There are so many births, many thousands of births you can take. But ultimately you will come to this realization. So this is about the moksha purushartha. Striving for moksha purushartha alone can give us happiness.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will now continue with the talk by Dr. Lata Shree on the topic, The Quest for Happiness.
See, once during Sankranti celebrations, Bhagwan was seated in the mandir along with a group of students and the Vedam chanting was going on. Bhagwan calls one of the boys and asks, what are they chanting? This boy listens attentively and he says, Swami, they are chanting Brahmananda Valli. Swami, with a mischievous grin, he says, it is not Brahmananda Valli, it is Atmananda Valli. See, here is the loving Lord, the compassionate Lord, who is teaching this boy, who is conveying this truth to this boy, the student, that Brahmananda, as we all know, it is the supreme happiness, is nothing but the ananda of your own self, the Atmananda. And then Swami tells this boy, now go out and give a public speech and tell all the people what I have told. And also tell them It is not enough if you chant the Vedas. You must understand its meaning. You must grasp its significance and you must put it into practice. And this is the Lord whose fourfold task is not only Bhakta Rakshana, Dharma Sthapana. It is also Veda Poshana and Vidvat Poshana, isn't it? That's why I thought I will include in this talk the gist of Ananda Mimamsa of Brahmananda Valli from the Taittiriya Upanishad. Ananda Mimamsa means an analysis of happiness. And this part of the Upanishad says, what is the maximum possible happiness that one can get in his life and what is the measure of it? And who is qualified to get this happiness? What is the basic prerequisite that man must have to get happiness? See, the first qualification itself is, you are Syat. You should be a very, very young person. Probably most of us are already out of the race. The second qualification is, you should be Sadhu Syat. You should be a noble person. Then Adhyayakaha. You should be a highly qualified person. Probably a PhD from Satya Sai University or a postdoctoral fellow. How many of us have this qualification or can even think of getting such a qualification at this age at least? Then it says, Ashishto, Balishto, Dhridishtaha. He must be of strong physical health, mental resoluteness, and he must be equally enthusiastic. And then it says, Tasyeyam sarva prithivi vittasya purnasyat. The entire riches of this earth should belong to this person. Probably he should be not one Bill Gates, 100 Bill Gates, a multi-billionaire. And how many of us can even think of having such a qualification? Just think about it. And the Upanishad says, the happiness that this kind of person with these qualifications, prerequisites, can get is equal to one unit or one measure of Manusha Ananda, the human happiness. And this Manusha Ananda, the Upanishad goes on to say, multiplied by 100 times is Gandharva Ananda. That multiplied by 100 is Deva Gandharva Ananda. And the hierarchy goes on like this. Then comes the joy of the Ajanas. Then it says the Pitrus, the joy of the Ajanas, and then the joy of the Devatas. Finally, the joy of Indra, the joy of Brihaspati, Prajapati, and ultimately the joy of Brahma, the Brahmananda. And roughly, if we calculate, it will come to 10 to the power of 20. That is the maximum possible happiness we can all get, provided we have these qualifications. See, if we analyze this happiness itself, it is coming mainly from enjoyment. As we go higher and higher up, our dharma has this concept of higher and higher heavens. This Gandharva Loka, Indra Loka, all these are the higher heavens. So, as we go higher up, we need superior bodies to enjoy this happiness, superior objects, and the superior lokas are also necessary. Since it is coming from objects, this ananda is known as bhoga sukha or vishayananda. And let us say this is the first method the Upanishad describes, track 1. So please remember, track 1 is vishayananda. And it is a very tall order. We cannot get happiness this way. So where is the way out? The Brahmananda Valli says, don't despair, don't worry, there is one more method. Track 2 is there for you, which you can strive. And the qualification for this, the Upanishad says is, Shrotriyasya cha akamahatasya. You have to be a Shrotriya, we have to be a akamahata. What does it mean? A Shrotriya is one who is well versed in Shastras and scriptures and who has practiced the teachings of these scriptures. But for us it is no big deal. Why? God himself is our guru, isn't it? What more do we need than the teachings of Bhagwan? Even the, like we have this Vahinis, we have Satya Sai Speaks, everything is available in Radio Sai so easily for us. As Kasturi ji would say, Bhagwan's every word is a mantra, every phrase is a sutra, every sentence a Gayatri, and every discourse an Upanishad. That is all we need. And not even this, the two Mahavakyas of Bhagwan are enough for us if we earnestly practice. Help ever, hurt never, love all, serve all. And the five human values, Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa, if we can bring this into our life, in our day-to-day activities, we can easily become a Kshatriya. But for this, we must listen to Swami, we must contemplate on the teachings, and we must practice it. Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana are very essential. That is an exercise for us. To become Kshatriya, we ourselves have to do. Though everything is given ready-made for us by Swami. A Kamahata is one who has given up the craving for the world. So this is the attitude of sannyasa, renunciation we can say. A sannyasi is one we know who has renounced the world, who is wearing the geruva clothes or the ochre robes. But even as householders, we can bring this attitude of sannyasa into our lives, the monk attitude. That is by renouncing the search for happiness in the world, we can all become monks and we can have this renunciates attitude. That is why Swami would say, even as you are engaged in your worldly activities, your mind and heart should be on the goal of human life and connect every activity to reaching that goal. Don't use God as the means to reach the world by begging for tinsel and trash. But have God as the goal and use this world itself, whatever may be your worldly activity. You're a teacher, you're a doctor, you're a homemaker, use it to get God. This is akamahataha. That's why Swami would say, hands in the society, head in the forest. Be in the world, but not of the world. Padmapatra mivambhasa. Be like a lotus leaf, which is untouched by the muddy, slushy water. The very water in which it is born, it grows and it survives. So the key here is to become akamahata, is to spiritualize every activity, every mundane activity in our life. Sanctify it with the name of God. Offer it to the Lord. Saishwar Arpanamastu. And when that work or activity is over, thank you Swami for being the doer in me. This is the way to give up attachment. See, Vairagya is nothing but sublimating our lower desires for higher ones and probably going for the highest one. Channelizing every activity towards that. See, the karma I am doing for this little self to benefit myself or at the most my family. Now, I will do it as a karma yoga. Do it with a selfless motive for the larger good of the world. And all the mind that is scattered in the world in many activities, I will collect that mind and I will channelize it towards God, towards my spiritual pursuit. I will do it for the sake of Daiva Preeti as an offering to the Lord to get His grace. This will help us to become akama hata. So this is the qualification. And the Upanishad says, and this type of ananda that we get is called as bhajanananda or yoga sukha. Track one is vishayananda. Track two is bhajanananda. So even this happiness, it says it multiplies just like this vishayananda, and it can go up to 10 to the power of 20. You can go higher and higher up even in bhajanananda. So don't you all think the wise move, the smartest move would be to learn the art of calming our mind, bring it into a sattvic state so that we can have this bhajanananda all the time and experience the self all the time and be perpetually happy? In fact, that is the wisest thing to do. And the entire spectrum of spiritual sadhana is aimed at getting this sattvic state of mind, increasing our rajoguna, conquering our tamoguna, and increasing our sattva guna, conquering our tamoguna and rajoguna. So what should we do? The guru says, come to me, I will teach you, take refuge in me. He says, come on, sit quietly, close your eyes, meditate on the self, look inwards, dhyana yoga. But what do we say? I cannot sit quietly in meditation. There are so many thoughts in my mind. What do I do? The Guru says, don't worry. I know your problem. I have diagnosed it. It is vikshepa, the restlessness of the mind. You need to bring in concentration, focus, chitta ekagrata. So what do I do, sir? I will give you a big list of things to do. The wide range of bhakti practices are designed for getting chitta ekagrata. Starting from prayer, and Swami says, go and do, attend Nagar Sankirtan, go to your samiti weekly once and attend bhajan, or come to Kulwant Hall twice a day and sit in the bhajan sessions, or you attend satsangs like this, or you study yourself, take Swami's books and study the literature, elevating literature. That will help you to understand his teachings, put it into practice and get chitta ekagrata. Or the simplest thing that every guru says is, do namasmarana. If you don't have time for others, at least chant the name of your Ishta Devata. That will not only give you chitta ekagrata, that will purify your mind also. And here I thought I would focus a little bit on prayer, prarthana, as one of the powerful tools to grow in bhajanananda and to increase our sattva guna. And as we all know, it is the first point of code of conduct in Bhagwan's 9-point code of conduct: daily meditation and prayer. As the saying goes, prayer is man's only strength and God's only weakness. But what should we pray for? That is the question. The Guru says, when you sit in prayer, don't be like a beggar. Don't pray for tinsel and trash. Give me this in the world, give me that car, give me this house. No. You pray for unflinching faith in the Lord. When you get this faith in the Lord, you have this conviction. You have this positive attitude that whatever happens in my life is for my good only, because God is in charge of my life. I need not break my head. He will take care of me. And you can be that much stress-free and you can be that much peaceful and happy. And the Guru also says, pray for obedience to the teachings of the Lord. And from this, you get acceptance of the will of the Lord. And when you get this, you are peaceful. That is why the key is to do everything as a naivedyam to the Lord, as an offering to the Lord, sarva karma bhagavat prityartham, to please the Lord and have this prasada buddhi, accept every outcome of our every action as his prasadam, that it is for our highest spiritual good only. So Guru says, pray for the spirit of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. This surrender is the greatest armor that a sadhaka can wear to fight any battle, any onslaught in this life full of various vicissitudes. See, this incident happened in the 80s, probably in the senior boys' hostel. Bhagwan had sent a sewing machine to the boys' hostel. And the brand of this machine was, sewing machine was Sahara sewing machine. And Swami thought, if they have this sewing machine in the hostel, the boys need not go out into the village for small repair works and they can do it themselves in the hostel. And these boys started talking. See, there are so many well-known brands in the world, like we all know Merit, Singer, Usha, they are all famous brands of sewing machine. And why Bhagwan has sent this unheard of brand, Sahara, to us? Then one of the boys quipped, see, we are sitting in the mandir and singing, no, Sahara, do Bhagwan. So Bhagwan has sent us this Sahara, so keep quiet. But this student who narrated this incident to us, he says, it is only after he graduated from the portals of Satya Sai University and he went out into the world and went about his ways, and when he had to face several ups and downs and thick and thin in the life. Life is not the same all the time. There are these ups and downs and triumphs and tragedies. When he had to go through all these things, he says, it is only then he realized that Bhagwan is the only Sahara sewing machine that can stitch together the torn bits and pieces of the cloth of his life and make it into a presentable cloth. So when we have this Sahara, Sai Sahara sewing machine with us all the time, the small things, the petty problems will not bother us, and we can be peaceful and happy despite the problems in our lives. So we must always pray for this spirit of surrender. And Bhagwan also says the selfless prayers are very important. In fact, he says the only prayer that you need is Samasta Lokaha Sukhino Bhavantu. In the welfare of these worlds is included your welfare also. That will be taken care of it. You need not separately pray for it. I was very much touched when one of our Sai brothers from Oman, who is actively involved with Seva for Autistic Children. It's a big group there called the Special Children of God, the SCG group. And he is involved with this group and it is doing a wonderful Seva for these children, the Autistic Children. And once when he had come on vacation to Parthi, he said to me, "See sister, these days when I put my head on Bhagwan's Samadhi in Kulwant Hall, the only prayer that comes to my mind is, Swami, please bless this autistic children. And nothing else comes to my mind at all." See the power of selfless prayer. See, this selfless seva or selfless prayers, when we try to do something to bring a smile on the face of such people, the downtrodden, the less privileged than us, that makes ourselves so much happy. That's why I love this quote. "I stopped cribbing that I don't have a pair of shoes when I saw a man who has no feet at all." So count your blessings and be contented. That gives us happiness in our worldly life, and that even gives us unconditional happiness. And Swami also says, pray for nearness and dearness to God, to think of God all the time. See, one of primary school teachers shared this incident with us long ago. There was a small school boy in Swami's primary school, a third standard or fourth standard boy, whose focus was always on Bhagwan. Even as a small boy, he would not think of anything else other than Bhagwan. And once Swami, along with these boys, Hida's boy was also there, Swami was watching a movie, Bhakta Dhruva. That film show was being played, and Dhruva is sitting in deep penance, and there is thundering and lightning and heavy rains and hailstorm. Then Swami said to these small boys, the school children, "See, look at Dhruva, how much of hardship he is going through to get God. Will you be able to do all this, go through this hardship to get God?" And this boy immediately says, "Why should we do all that, Swami? Swami, we have got you, we have got God with us. Now here he is sitting with us." So this should be the focus that should be there all the time in our mind, that we are near and dear to God and God is with us all the time. That's why the Lord says in the Gita also, "Mam anusmara yudhyacha," have me and go into the battlefield and fight this battle of life. So as I said, the key for us is spiritualizing our every activity with the name of the Lord, and doing everything for his sake and to please him. And one step more than this, Swami says, is ask for God himself. See, Swami tells often this funny chinakatha in this context. There was a king who had an exhibition of fine arts and paintings and so many artworks. And he also said, whoever comes to the exhibition can walk away with anything absolutely free of cost. And everyone goes with something or the other, and there is a lady who goes around the exhibition, but she goes out empty-handed. The king comes running to her and asks, "Didn't you like anything here? Why aren't you taking anything?" Then she says, "Will you give me whatever I ask?" The king says, yes, that is the condition of the exhibition. Anything will be given. And she says, O king, I want you. So this clever lady knows if she has the king, the entire exhibition becomes hers. It will be at her disposal. So Bhagwan similarly would say, in this cosmic exhibition, ask for creator himself. Then everything in the creation will be given to you. So in conclusion about prayer, I would say the best prayer would be, Thy will be done, Swami. I will accept your will, come what may, because that is the best thing for me and that is the only thing that will keep me happy even in adverse situations. So this is about the bhakti practices to bring chitta ekagrata. But we say to the guru, we are doing all these things for so many decades, but still we cannot concentrate. What is the problem? The guru says, your problem is chittamala. The mind is full of impurities. So how can you focus even if you do all these bhakti practices? So you need to bring in chitta shuddhi. You need to conquer your tamoguna. So go out into the society and do selfless seva. Engage in karma yoga. Karma yoga is doing karma with bhakti to get jnana. When work is transformed into worship, it leads to wisdom. And another beauty of karma yoga is that a karma yogi, by definition, he doesn't do a karma or an activity or an action for the sake of happiness. He is not expecting that the fruit of action, the outcome of action, the karma phala is going to bring him happiness. Instead, he does the karma out of happiness, from happiness itself. So this karma itself is giving him happiness. So don't you think a wise way would be to do everything as karma yoga so that as we are doing this action, we are happy right now, right here. So we have seen karma, bhakti, dhyana, very important for us to increase our bhajanananda, to get the sattvic state of mind, to meditate so that we can see the reality that is beyond the mind. But Brahmananda Valli says, no, this is not the end of the quest for happiness. Track 1 Vishyananda, track 2 Bhajanananda, there is track 3. That is Brahmananda. Right now, right here, you need not chase the Vishayananda. You need not struggle and strive for Bhajanananda. If you are able to rise above your body and mind complex, the Deha Bhava, if you are convinced that I am that Atman, Brahman, myself, if you realize your true identity right now, right here, without anything, you can be free. You can be free of your own little self. There is no more hankering for anything. You are liberated. That is why Swami would say, happiness is union with God. This is track 3. And this is essentially, as we understand, the Jnana Marga, the path of wisdom, or the path of self-inquiry. Who am I? And realizing Koham, and realizing Soham. I am I. But, so even if we say that this is the path, this is the direct flight to divinity. Even to reach the airport to board this flight, we need other modes of transport. That is why we inevitably need karma yoga, bhakti yoga, dhyana yoga in our spiritual journey to qualify for the path of wisdom, to engage ourselves, to get that viveka, vairagya, essential for the path of inquiry. Because viveka is nitya anitya vastu viveka, to discriminate between the real and the unreal, to know what to hold on to know what to let go of. And this only gives us vairagya or dispassion to the worldly things. That's why Swami says, attach yourself to God naturally your attachment to worldly things go away. That is why we need karma yoga, bhakti yoga and dhyana yoga as the inevitable steps, even for track 3, Brahmananda. And for this, most importantly, above all, what we need is the grace of the Lord. Our scriptures say, Ishvara anugrahat eva pumsan advaita vasana. Even if you have to come to this spiritual way of living, to realize that advaita, as Swami would say, I and you are one, that is advaita. Even for that, you need loads and loads and tons of divine grace. Ishvara anugraha. So our every effort should be towards that. And this is where self-effort becomes very important for us in our quest for happiness. And as this shloka, this prarthana shloka in the Bhagavad Gita goes, Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripatam aham vande Paramananda Sai Madhavam. It is His grace alone that can make the mute speak, the lame climb the mountain. And it is this grace alone that can confer upon us the supreme bliss, Paramananda, which is Atyantika Dukha Nivritti. Only when we get this, when we have this union with the Lord, when we are focused on the Lord all the time, there is atyantika dukkha nivritti, cessation of every kind of, even the greatest sorrow, and paramananda prapti, attainment of highest bliss. With deepest sense of gratitude, I thank Bhagwan for the blessing on all of us to be a generation on this earth when this Purnavatar walked the earth. See, to breathe the same air, to walk on the same sand, that the avatar, where avatar walked, is not a very simple blessing. It is probably the highest blessing, probably the highest grace that we can all pray for. And we have all got this. So we should never let go of this opportunity. I thank Bhagwan for this humble opportunity of satsang, of dwelling on His teachings here today and sharing some of His teachings with you all. And I also pray to the Lord to bless all of us to be worthy of His love and grace so that we remain steadfast on the right track to our pilgrimage to His lotus feet, because that is the end of quest for happiness or supreme bliss. Because as you know, this happened in an interview, a devotee asked Swami, Swami, how can we be happy and peaceful all the time? Swami said, are you happy right now? Oh yes, Swami, no doubt about it. Why? Because we are with you, Swami, I am with you. So why don't you do the same thing? Have Swami with you all the time. Be with Swami all the time. Carry Swami wherever you go, wherever you are, whatever you are doing. Thank you very much for your patient listening. I thank the organizers of the satsang. Thank you once again. Jai Sai Ram.
Silently setting the rhythm of our lives. We offer our music to thee, and you sit there with your eyes closed, silently enrapturing us with the music of thy love. your faith, the melody that our heart beat. Pray and grant us that we may spread the music of thy love, which echoes in every heart that beats. Whose beauty nature always reflects, whose glory the world always sings. Whose beauty the nature always reflects, whose glory the world always sings. Our gratitude drop to that infinite beauty, silently enrapturing us with the music of thy love. The wonderful song which never fades, the melody that our heart beat. We pray, grant us that we may spread the music of thy love, which echoes in every heart that beats. Which echoes in every heart that beats. How then can we ever think His dirge to be a history, when we wake up every morning only to find Him in the brilliance of the sun, in the caress of the breeze, in the songs of the bees, in the cool rays of the moon.
Tell you what I felt. I felt so much love like I've never before. Compassion and care in your eyes. Freedom I felt from all my desires. Never felt so much peace in my soul. I'm falling so deep in the depths of my soul. I'm feeling so much bliss. I'm sure we met before. When I saw you the first time, said to Sai Baba, I can't tell you what I felt. Your face had the glow of a million suns. Your smile was so caring and pure. The wave of your hand as you walked towards me has changed my life since then. The way
life really is. Thank you for the awareness that you have given me, and thank you for the happiness that you have imparted by giving me this opportunity to serve you. Thanks for coming into my life. Thank you, Swami. I really love you. Love you from the bottom of my heart.
I'm falling so deep in the depths of my soul. I'm feeling so much bliss. Oh, you are my Savior, Sai Baba. Always be good. This is the way to God. Hands that help are holier than lips that pray. Service to mankind is service to God. You are my living God, Sai Baba. When I saw you the first time, Sati Sai Baba, I can't tell you what I felt. Your face had the glow of a million suns. Your smile was so caring and pure. The wave of your hand as you walked towards me has changed my life since then. The way I thought, the way I was, the way life was, I'm sure it's never gonna be the same again.
In this new year, that I may continue to hear the still silent voice of the true self whispering in my ear. And I pray in this new year that I stay close to what I hold dear, the still silent voice of the true self answering me ever clear. I lash myself to the mast of this big white boat going across the bumpy sea of life as the true self. I ride the wave of spirit as the true self. I ride the wave of spirit. And I praise in this new year all who raise their voices to share still silent voice of their true self whispering in their ear. We lash ourselves to the mast of this big white boat going across the bumpy sea of life as the true self. We ride the wave of spirit as the true self. We ride the wave of spirit out upon the rough and tumble ocean, far away from any solid ground. Look inside to see past all commotion. Your heart's answer is waiting to be found. Just be the sun and let your light burn the clouds away. Hey, hey. My faith in this new year shows me how I can always hear that still silent voice of the true self answering me ever clear.
I lash myself to the mast of this big white boat going across the bumpy sea of life. As the trousseau, I ride the wave of spirit. As the trousseau, I ride the wave of spirit. Out upon the rough and tumble ocean, far away from any solid ground, look inside to see past all commotion. Your heart's answer is waiting to be found. Just be the sun and let your light burn the clouds away. Hey. I lash myself to the mast. Oh yeah.
light shine down on me. By your love we all shall see. Hands that heal are meant for sharing.